I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
So here we are, Ruthie, start of a brand new series.
What's different in the new series then? Well, nothing's different in the new series.
Well, you say
is
that.
Is the new series different to the first series? What makes it a second series? Well, nothing really.
Except we had a break. I know you like to use the American word, so it's the second season. The
season.
Second season. The first season was over. 37 we did in the first season. Very good.
Does that mean we have to do 37 in the next season?
Not necessarily. We'll do something. Well, you'll be going off to university, so we probably...
Yeah, because I was at the dentist the other day. Everything's fine, in case you were worried.
That's been a lot of people writing you.
And he was saying, well, we can start seeing you every 12 months now because you're over 18, because that's how the dentist works. And then he went, oh, well, actually, we'll put you in for 9 months because if we go 12 months, then you'll already be at uni. As I was leaving, he was like, oh, good luck in the exams, which are obviously not for a while, but it's weird that, isn't it? Like, I've known my dentist for 10 years, maybe, maybe more even. You know, I just see him at such, like, weird intervals of my life. Like, it's
well,
just weird,
every 6
isn't
months.
It?
There's nothing weird about
no,
every
not
six
weird,
months.
But like, like most
you
people
no
who you've
relation.
Known,
yeah,
yeah, most people who you've known for over a decade, you would have quite a close relationship.
It is odd, actually.
It's a weird dynamic.
And you just pick it up. I think that's part of the skill of being a dentist, and even more so being a hairdresser, because the dentist is very, very quick. You know, the dentist has a quick look.
If you're hurtful. And also, a lot of the time you can't speak because he's got his fingers in your mouth.
Correct.
Or her fingers in
your
mouth.
Yes, indeed. But with a hairdresser, it's different. The hairdresser,
but then I don't have the same hairdresser like that.
See, I've had the same guy cutting my hair for over 30 years now.
That's ridiculous.
It's amazing, man and boy. And fortunately, it's stayed more or less...
Yeah, you're very lucky.
More or less the same.
You've not been Wayne Rooney.
I'm lucky in the hair. I'm very lucky I've not been Wayne Rooney as far as the hair goes. As far as the earnings go.
Maybe.
He's done better. And apart from as the football skills go. Anyway, here we are, chatting away at the start of... This could be the unique selling point of Series 2, the fact that we have a slightly longer chat at the start before we officially start the podcast.
Yeah.
So that could be it. But we usually, when we do this quirky bit, I usually have a little joke that I. But unfortunately, I blew it because I told it you when I came. It was a joke that.
I'm not going to lie, Dad. I do not remember.
Well, what do you call a hen looking at lettuce? Chicken Caesar salad.
You've not told me that. I don't think so.
That's the sort of
you've ruined it now, though.
Yeah. I thought I'd told you that.
No, that's
anyway,
funny.
Let me quote you one from Caroline. You'll like this because it's a woman comedian, Caroline Maybe, and her joke.
I'll only like it if it's funny because that's a quality.
All right. Here we go. This is Caroline's joke. She says, "I'm very conflicted by eye tests. I want to get the answers right, but I really want to win the glasses."
That's really good.
That's
so relatable as well, because you do, don't you?
Yeah, you do.
Although I've been to the opticians once. Mm. Gosh, you guys are getting to hear so much about my various health things. My teeth are fine, my eyes not so much. I've been to the opticians once and I got glasses and I never wear them ever.
Yeah. I think you'll be all right for a bit with it.
I think so,
but it's true, I have been...
You'll either be fine or you'll die. That's what you've always got to remember.
Mm. And that's my motto, isn't it, as I've said to you in the past. But I've been actually for which is more serious. I've been for a diabetic eye test, you know, because of type 2 diabetes.
Because your eyes just fall out.
Yeah, whatever. So I've been for where they're just checking that diabetes isn't affecting your eyes and everything. And I've actually cheated by looking at the thing before.
Beforehand?
Yeah. When you go in there, which also really is the most dumbest thing to do, isn't it?
Yeah, really stupid. But sometimes they do, you know, they're like, is this better, is this better? And you're like, that's the same. That is the exact same. Is this better, is this better? And then they get you to read the letters. Mm. But by that time, I've already read the letters 10 times. I'm not an idiot. I know the pattern's repeating. So you'll say to them, you'll be like, well, I mean, it's an M, but it looks like an N, but I know it's an M. And then they're like, well, what do you see? Mm. But I can't not see the M.
Well, I think we've established that we've got some level there and we're recording, so let's begin. Yeah, welcome along. It's Ruthie, Me and My Dad, Series 2, Episode 1.
Oh, gosh, I've written down Episode 38.
Yeah, well, I think I might still number it as episode 38, so I don't want to change the numbering convention in case it doesn't show up on everybody's podcast provider. I'll tell you what I think's quite...
Also, the fact that there's no actual difference is a great reason as well.
Well, you say that. I'll tell you there is a significant difference in that, you know how when we get emails and you always say they're all from my cronies, i.e. people who listen to me on Talk Sport or Talk Radio. Well, this one says, hi, Martin and Ruth, I'm 22. So I thought it'd be a welcome change for you to hear some correspondence from someone closer to Ruth's age and someone who's never heard of Martin before this pod, bracket, sorry. So this is somebody who's only ever heard me on the podcast.
How did they find it?
By,
see, this worries me.
Well, no, that's not worrying. That's good. That's good.
Yeah, it but it worries me that, you know, my fellow
You're worried about your friends finding it, yeah.
No, not my close friends. They know it exists.
Anyway,
The wider circle.
Okay.
Well, anyway, sorry.
This is Andrew. And he says, despite being closer to Ruth's age, I find myself completely lost when she's talking about her lingo and what's on the telly. I'm a big fan of Loyal Kana and Jordan Raki. Is it Raki?
Mackay, or? I think.
Mackay, yeah.
I'm not actually sure because I've never heard anyone say it out loud.
Yeah. Well,
he was the guy, we played Ottolenghi.
See, if you, I mean, people will be picking it up for the first time, being that it's series two, episode one of this brand new, sort of brand new podcast. Therefore, we ought to explain, I sometimes play Ruth music from my generation.
How long is this facade going to go on of this season one, season two thing?
Anyway, I'm a big fan of Loyal Kana and Jordan Raquet, so it was great to hear them get a mention. I've also been a huge fan of the Japanese House for a while now, too. So well done, Ruth, for giving them a shout out. I'm getting married in a couple of weeks.
You're 22?
Yeah.
That's scary.
It is scary. I'm getting married in a couple of weeks. And me and my fiancé...
Congrats
and good luck. Me and my fiancé...
Mazel tov.
Yes. Both enjoy the pod and find your relationship, brackets, on mic at least. That's so true. He says he really likes our fake relationship.
We genuinely do not talk.
It makes me look forward to hopefully having a daughter of my own one day. So not only getting married at 20, he's looking forward to having his own children. Big love to you both.
Scary.
Keep up the good stuff. And it's Andrew Lavers from Cornwall, who says, P.S. Ruth's Owen Wilson impression is a joy.
Moving on.
No, Owen Wilson, come on.
No, I don't want to do it.
All right, we'll do it before the end of the podcast, yeah? I mean,
I'm not doing it ever at all on this podcast.
Really?
On this episode.
Okay, well, that's fair enough. It's your choice. I won't force you to do anything you don't want to do. Speaking of forcing people to do things, I was watching a thing on YouTube about Seinfeld, and basically it was a feature called Does It Hold Up? And what they did, it was quite an interesting experiment. They because Seinfeld is generally, you just accept that it's a great comedy and it's brilliant and it's groundbreaking, etc., etc.
Mm-hmm.
And they showed it to a bunch of college kids between the ages of 18 and 22. So they showed various episodes of Seinfeld. And I seem to remember being a bit queasy about this at the time, when he gets that girl, you know, he gives her tranquilizers or, you know, drugs.
So he goes to this, he's dating this girl in her apartment. She's got lots of, like, toys, but, you know, they're all, like, kept in boxes, you know, for,
beautiful,
like, pristine.
First editions,
Like, they're not to be played with. And he like gets her to eat loads and loads of like beef brisket and like big heavy rich foods, and gets her to drink loads of red wine to make her fall asleep so him and George can play with the toys.
Yeah.
Is the premise.
That is the premise, exactly the premise. I think it was 6 out of 8 of them could not get on board with that. You know, they gave it a thumbs down. Simply because...
Oh, come on, though. It's funny.
Well, it was funny, wasn't it? And at the time, I thought it was funny. Yeah. But they showed you a couple of other episodes as well. And I just thought, you've watched all the Seinfelds within the last sort of 5 years or so. But you're still on board with Seinfeld.
Yeah, I do.
Because he is very... It's very non... You couldn't make it these days because there's no black characters in it.
No, but then Lena Dunham got Girls Made. And there are, the four main characters in that are all white.
Mm.
Like, it's because, I think that it works because it's kind of semi-autobiographical. Do you know what I mean? Like, Seinfeld is
a comedian
and it's kind of the relationship with Elaine. Like, I'm sure he didn't have a relationship with Julia Louis-Dreyfus, that's not what I'm suggesting, but I'm sure that that relationship kind of existed. Like, I think that's why you can get away with it. And I always talk about girls.
Well, I think you might be
wrong. It's a parody of itself.
I think you might be wrong about that relationship, you know, the Julia Louis-Dreyfus thing existed. Because when they did, and the only reason I know this is she won the Mark Twain Award, which is an award for comedy,
the comedy in
America. And Seinfeld gave a speech, and he said that initially, the first one that was ever shown was just him, George, and Kramer.
Yeah.
And the network said, yeah, you ought to have a woman character in it. And therefore, Elaine, you know, so they started auditioning for a woman character, and Elaine auditioned, obviously got the part. And the whole point of it was, he said, that, you know, usually the network people tell you something and it's usually nonsense, they've no idea.
Yeah.
And they call it a network note. So when you do a pilot, the network gives you a note. So he said, you know, essentially what Julia Louis-Dreyfus is a network note, because they said, so I don't think that bit was, you know, that wasn't actually.
Yeah, no, I don't think that was, but like the stuff about him being a comedian and then like all the dates, like it's very. Like, it's aware of itself, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean.
I think that's why it's fine.
But he's a sort of comedian on the basis, almost like Louis C.K., you know what I mean? Quite male and macho. And I really don't think... Well, it was interesting because I've got tickets to see him when he's over in Britain in July.
Seinfeld?
Yeah.
Oh. I thought you meant Louis C.K. I was going to be like, no, don't.
Well, your sister's been to see Louis C.K.
Yeah, but...
Did you know that?
No.
Your elder sister, who's just been in New York, went to see a comedy night... he wasn't billed, but he comes on at the end, and he's now.
Oh, so she didn't know she was going to see Louis C.K.
No, but
well, that's okay.
Well,
you can't help it if Louis C.K. turns up.
No, I'm not saying you could help it, and why would you?
Because
I mean, he did what he did, and everybody knows what he did. He's apologized, etc.
I'm not sure an apology really gets.
So you think he should be banished forever, never ever allowed to?
Yeah.
Do stand up
comedy
again? Maybe,
I don't know. I mean. It just seems, I think for now, men should be banished because...
What men? All men?
Men should be banished after they commit crimes like Louis C.K. did. Just because so many women don't get justice. Like, it just seems unfair to let the few who are...
But you've got to put a limit on it, surely. You know, you'd think he's more or less done his time. No.
Or yeah, but maybe he should... fair enough. He should be able to, like, go about his normal life and everything. But, like, to have a public persona still seems iffy.
Well, I suppose...
You know, to still be... To have his career the same as it was before.
And how long do you think Kevin Spacey should be banished? Should he be allowed to make films again?
No, I don't know. I thought Kevin Spacey was dead.
Just because he's not
making
films. I
thought he died.
What, you mean
he got accused of abuse, then he came out as gay,
had the
and
decency
then died.
To die.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
You didn't really think that. I don't believe you.
I did.
Now, you had a thing, Ruth, about white girls pretending to be black.
Yes.
Tell me about that.
So, there was a thread on Twitter that went quite, like, viral. And it was... This girl who said, can we start a thread and post all of the white girls cosplaying as black women on Instagram?
All of the white girls what? Playing?
Cosplaying.
Cosplaying?
Do you know...
No,
what?
I've not heard of that.
Cause, so cosplaying is like, you know, like Comic-Con events and stuff?
Yeah, yeah.
When people dress up as like Daenerys Targaryen from Game of Thrones or Spider-Man or something.
Yeah.
So that's what cosplaying is. And so basically there's a lot of these pictures of these white girls who have taken like black culture and black characteristics and like protect and like look like them. So I thought the best way for me to show you this, you should probably Google the Twitter feed because obviously I can only do a certain amount with description, but I thought I'd show you a picture because you were really in a sense. So this is one of the top girls who comes up in the search. She looks kind of like me, like Caucasian.
Which girl am I looking at?
This is the same girl.
Really? So she's got black makeup. She's blacked up.
Well, kind of. So basically, it'll be like
sort of thing.
So it'll be like there's a trend at the moment for like fake tan and having like the hair
she looks like she's a Latino.
No, she looks like a light skinned black girl.
Yeah,
really. There is a trend for like a lot of the culture
I've never seen black women. That.
Well, I hadn't seen it like this. And there's a trend for like that kind of hair and stuff and of having the fake tan and things. But it is essentially blackface.
It is
really,
almost, yeah.
And it's that kind of thing. And so
and
this
do they
girl,
put the pictures up themselves?
This is like Instagram. So she'll have like tons of followers on Instagram. So basically someone uses the term, it's the N-word and then fished, you know, like catfished. So it's the N-word and then fished.
Fished
F-I-S-H-E-D. So you know what catfished is?
Sort of.
So catfishing someone is where you pretend to be someone else online, but you're not actually there.
Ah, yes. People get on dating sites, do they?
Yeah. So it'll often be like a really old man who pretends to be like a young, really pretty girl to entice like young boys, like 13-year-old boys or whatever. And so someone's called it. And I don't know whether this is a term that a lot of people use or not, but it's kind of what comes up a lot in the Twitter thread. And it's the N-word, which obviously I'm not going to say, and then fished. It's like catfished. It's N-fished. She was talking about how most white girls on Instagram, these Instagram celebrities, do everything in their power to look like black girls. And often brands will choose to work with the white girls who are cosplaying or like are taking like black culture and black characteristics and get paid for it, whereas black girls often don't get endorsed by brands.
So this is like the same sort of thing as when you're doing the Mikado, you know, Gilbert and Sullivan, and instead of casting Japanese women, you cast white women who sort of look a bit Japanese.
I guess. And so this is
another
picture.
That's come up quite a few times, hasn't it?
This is another picture of a girl who's white, but it's like taking the trend for like that kind of curly hair and tan and
so it'd be okay without the tan because it's just the tan that makes you
maybe
look
but then like so some a lot of people were talking about like the Kardashians were the original people who did this. Kim Kardashian is white, but she does look like she has some kind of minority ethnic origin. Do you know what I mean? And then they talked a lot about Kylie Jenner having loads and loads of lip fillers, and then black girls will be like made fun of for having really big lips, but then Kylie Jenner's made it into her career and because she has like lots of lip products in her brand and stuff. And
so a lot of people are getting outraged over this.
I think a lot of black women are getting outraged
because
they're
missing out on work, aren't they? Because
they're missing out on work, but also it's like cultural appropriation. It's scary.
Here's something I spotted, Ruth, that bears out what you've often said. Parents often tell their children to put away their phones, but parents are spending too much time...
You and Mum are on your phones. Oh, my gosh. I'm on my phone, I would say probably more, but you and Mum are more easily immersed. Like, you two can't do anything if you're looking at your phone, whereas I can multitask better.
Right, is that the issue? But apparently, see, you're lucky in a way that when you were a toddler in those important developmental years, phones, certainly smartphones, weren't in existence.
I never had
a smartphone when you were a toddler, which meant that we could give all our attention to you. I want you to spare a thought.
Shower me in love.
Precisely. I want you to spare a thought for the generation of toddlers growing up now. Because according to the education secretary, what does he know? But anyway, he says that parents tell the children to put the phone away, but spending too much time at home on the devices themselves. He says they should spend more time reading stories and reciting nursery rhymes to their babies and toddlers. And I hadn't thought of this, but obviously now with the smartphone and everything, and with people with work being so pressured as well, there'd be people be looking at emails.
Do you think that people work more now than they used to?
I think there's more pressure at the moment, and I think that's because there are just more people
in less jobs.
More people and fewer jobs. Let me explain to you, if you're catching on to this podcast for the first time, you've just joined us for
season two.
For season two of the Ruthie, Me and My Dad podcast. No, it's not ridiculous. Stay with it. If you're just tuning in for series two, one of the threads that runs through it, almost like a catchphrase, is Ruth says less when she should say fewer. So, fewer opportunities and more people for every opportunity.
I guess, yeah, you've got to work harder to keep hold of the job. But also, I think it's a thing of, like, you never turned off from your job because you're always checking emails. Do you know what I mean? Mm. Someone can email you at 8 p.m. at night.
Precisely. Someone can email you. See, this was a problem that I never had to deal with. When I used to put you to bed at 7 o'clock at night and I was reading a book to you. However, I'm just thinking now, if you've got notifications on you, I don't get a sound notification for emails or Twitter or any of that, or Facebook. When you were young, if I was working in a high-pressure job and I got a ding, I'd probably say, oh, hang on a minute, and then you'd break the thread. And it's a real problem.
I think it's even worse, like, kids getting phones when they're like... So I didn't have my first phone until I was 11, I think. I think when I started high school, that's when I got my first phone.
And you've been talking about going back to just having
I might go back to a Nokia, you know. I don't know, like, I think...
You couldn't.
I couldn't, just because I don't want everyone to be like, can I add you on Snapchat? And then I have to be like, oh, I don't have it, because then you look really uncool. But I am tempted. I used that when I went to Leeds Fest last year. I didn't use my normal phone. I had, like, a little Nokia burner phone, and it was lovely.
Burner phone.
That's what you call it.
Oh, do you? Why do you call it a burner phone?
Because when you're on the run...
From Hunted? Have you got this from Hunted?
Well, no, that's just what you call it, a burner phone. They do use that term on Hunted, but that's not where I got it from. They just call it a burner phone because...
So it's because you can just burn it.
If you're on the run and then you pick up the phone, then you can just burn it afterwards.
Right, so people can't trace you.
Yeah.
It's a different number and sort of stuff. It's very useful. I'm learning stuff here.
It's a really exciting, riveting kind of... We're hitting the hard topics this week.
We certainly are. We'll have a short break for a commercial.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like, a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And we'll play some music now.
Yes, let's
play yours first.
Mine first?
Yeah, tell me about it.
So mine is by Childish Gambino.
And tell me about Childish
Gambino. So Childish Gambino is the pseudonym?
Yeah, I think. It depends what you mean.
Stage name. Stage name is better probably than... What does pseudonym mean?
Pseudonym.
Every time I use the word pseudonym, and it's a complete shot in the dark.
A pseudonym just means a name you've made up,
really. Oh yeah, well, so it's that as well. And it's Donald Glover. Do you know who Donald Glover is?
He's an actor.
Yeah, he's an actor, and he's been in the newest Spider-Man film. He was in 30 Rock a bit. He was in The Martian. he's going to be in the newest Lion King film. Right. He's going to be Simba in that.
So he's hot stuff.
He's
on the
hot
rise.
Stuff. He very
Donald Glover.
He was in that Atlanta TV series as well.
All right.
Yeah, Donald Glover. And Childish Gambino is his stage name, and he does rap and that. And this is... I've liked Childish Gambino for ages and ages, and to be honest, I was kind of struggling because I've not been listening to tons of new music recently.
Just listen to ABBA a lot.
yeah, a lot of ABBA. I've just not been... I just go through phases of finding loads of new stuff that I really like. And
but not only have you been listening to ABBA, you've ordered, you were just telling me to my shock this morning, a pair of flared velvet trousers.
Yeah, they're trendy.
All right, should we... X Called Feels Like Summer or something like Summer. Right?
It feels like Summer, and it's from... It's,
but
it was released
on
in like
the,
July
on video,
2018.
On the video that goes with it, it was cartoons.
Yeah, he's very cool. His videos are always really cool and stuff, and he's cool. I don't feel like you get a full sense of what the song's like.
We're only allowed to play 20 seconds for copyright purposes, but I listened through to a bit of it to see if there was something different, and there wasn't.
There's not
really
loads. It's quite like just a... It's good to have on like a background song.
Yeah,
I find.
It does seem a bit like
some of his... A lot of other songs that he does is better, but I know that you like me to do newer stuff.
You do. I mean, it's all new to me. Whatever. I've played a fair amount in 1960s stuff, and even 1950s, and I think I played 1930s one week. This is the mid-60s, but I don't think it's a band we've played much in the car and things, because we do play quite a bit of Beatles and Beach Boys and things. Mm. Are you familiar with The Byrds?
I don't think so.
Well, let's play a bit of The Byrds. So, jangly guitar, love it. Were you familiar with The Byrds, or is it new to you?
I don't think so, no, I think it's new.
Well, the only track you ever hear on the radio of The Byrds, or the track you hear most, is Mr. Tambourine Man. You don't even hear that very much.
Yeah, that's why I thought I recognised the beginning, because it's got a similar start.
Similar jangly guitar. If you want to know exactly what it is, it's a 12-string Rickenbacker, apparently.
Oh, I did want to know what it was.
Yeah,
I'm glad you told me 12, that.
It's a jangly 12-string Rickenbacker guitar. They were a really influential band, The Byrds. And probably a lot of when you see sort of indie boy bands,
The dreaded
indie boy bands, a lot of those will have been influenced by The Byrds. I mean, I know the Beatles is the key influence in the 60s, but The Byrds as well. And they played a part in... I know you're a huge Bob Dylan fan, and we went to see Bob Dylan in Nottingham and everything. Well, The Byrds sort of helped popularise Bob Dylan.
Yeah, I mean, did he do his song Mr. Tambourine Man after they did that?
No, of course not. He it was on his early album, first, second album.
Yeah.
Second album, I think. But they picked it up off his album. But they picked up a few tracks. You Ain't Going Nowhere, another Dylan track they recorded. My Back Pages, they recorded a few Dylan... That wasn't a Dylan track. Those words were from the Book of Ecclesiastes, which is a good Catholic schoolgirl you should know all about. But yeah, that's The Byrds anyway. They formed in Los Angeles, California in 1964. Brief period of fame in the mid-60s, doing that sort of jangly guitar. And then a lot of them... You know how much I like country rock.
You do like country rock.
I do like country rock a lot, which is a terrible thing to admit at the moment. But anyway, I do.
At the moment. And,
well, you know what I mean? It sort of goes in and out of fashion. And I don't think it's... I mean, I might as well say...
In and out.
I mean, now you could say, I like country rock, or you could say, I'm an old age pensioner. They sort of amount to the same thing. But so we played Crosby, Stills and Nash, didn't we?
Yeah, we did.
Well, David Crosby of Crosby, Stills and Nash was in The Byrds, so they're a lot of them. And somebody went on to the Flying Burrito Brothers.
It's all very incestuous, isn't it?
Well, the country rock scene, I suppose, was, and they did go, a lot of them were in different bands, Flying Burrito Bands, Eagles, and those sort of bands. Anyway, that's our music spot for this week. If you're coming to this for the new season, and you didn't listen to the past season, what we do is I introduce Ruth to some music from my generation, and Ruth introduces me to something from her generation. And I noticed that the Bee Gees, which we've talked about, feature heavily on your playlist.
Oh, I love How Deep Is Your Love. It's the best song ever.
Now, a little bit about J.K. Rowling and Harry Potter and what's described in the newspaper as the dominant cultural influence of the Harry Potter books and films. And you, I suppose, are the Harry Potter generation, more or less. I think your sister
Just a bit more between 26 and 18, I would say. Well, 26 and 16.
According to Indian Knight, writing in the Sunday Times, the Potter books, the Harry Potter books, have sort of defined a moral universe. I'll read you what she says, actually. She says, Hogwarts is hardly the Rainbow Nation, but it does contain black and brown characters. It values and loves geeks, nerds and outsiders. Is healthily suspicious of privilege and places the highest value on learning and love. Would you go along with all that? Do you think, I mean, have you found Harry Potter influence?
Yeah, I think Harry Potter is such an influence on other things as well.
But do you think it influences behaviour? She's said...
Oh, I don't know. I don't know how much I believe in all this psychoanalytical stuff. I mean, yeah, I guess it does.
In 2016, apparently, a study published in the American Journal Political Science found that Harry Potter readers were more likely to dislike Donald Trump because his dominating kind of politics is something people associate with Voldemort.
But is that just kids who read books, though? Do you know what I mean? Like, I think the people who read Harry Potter are people who are more inclined to celebrate differences and stuff. Do you know what I mean? The kids who read Harry Potter at school were the kids who wouldn't have agreed with Donald Trump anyway. Yeah. I'm not sure that's necessarily because they were reading Harry Potter.
Yeah, I was going to say, do you think if they just had, read different books than Harry Potter?
No, I think that the kids who read don't like Donald Trump.
So that's what you're saying. Kids who read... Harry Potter's got nothing to do with it.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just kids who read are maybe a little more intelligent or woke, to use your word. Woke.
Yeah, maybe. But also, I think just kids, maybe not Donald Trump, but kids who read tend to be more sensitive. And if you read Harry Potter, usually you've been reading from a young age and then you move on to Harry Potter. I think that reading does give you, makes you more empathetic. But I don't think that's necessarily just Harry Potter. I think that's reading in general.
Yeah, I mean, you say that, but if you were reading, there must be some people. And I know
reading like Stephen King books would make you more empathetic.
Yeah. Well, you're a big fan of Stephen King, aren't you?
Stand by me. I mean, that's the only thing I've read by him.
Yeah. What's it called? The Body.
The Body, yeah. But I've not...
Yeah, see, according to India Knight, her key sentence in this piece that she wrote about Harry Potter is, our millennials have imbibed her ethos. So she's saying...
I've got no idea what imbibed means.
Imbibed means sort of drunk in. So basically what she's saying is that millennials have drunk in the philosophy of J.K. Rowling, basically.
Yeah, I suppose that's true. It is maybe probably the most influential book of our generation.
Now, you have a thing about women who talk too loud.
Well, kind of.
Ooh.
Basically, someone, and I can't remember who it is now, wrote an article called In Praise of Loud Women, The Joy and Power of Being Noisy and Female, whatever this means, is important, because I think we are redefining what it means to be loud. So basically, the idea that girls especially, used to get called bossy a lot in school, and now women are kind of reclaiming that, and with people like Amy Poehler and Tina Fey and Oprah, I guess, to an extent, of saying it's okay to be like loud and brash and funny, and that doesn't make you bossy. Is that a new thing? Do you think women are being allowed to speak their minds a bit more?
Well, I think that's probably true. Women are probably allowed to be out there more. But, I thought when you told me you were going to talk a little bit about loud women, I thought you meant sometimes when you're on the train and there are...
Oh, no! There are
eight women going down to London and they've got their bottles of Prosecco
and their little plastic glasses.
And their little plastic glasses. And somebody's got a zip-up bag with sandwiches and, well, not so much sandwiches, crisps, loads of crisps. And they're giggling and talking bollocks for the entire trip.
Not talking bollocks
very, very loudly.
No, that was not what I was going to say at all. And also, it's very telling that you signify that as a women thing, when I've definitely been next to far more men who are drinking cider out of cans and are much louder.
Usually beer out of cans. No, I same thing. Same thing. I mean, I would... people bringing more than three cans per person of booze, I would ban them from trains, to be honest. And I certainly ban anybody bringing McDonald's on a train, but we've already mentioned that in season one. We covered all that in season one.
So what I was talking about it from a feminist point of view, but what you've made into is a tacky piece.
Yeah, tacky. Totally tacky.
Someone called Afua Hirsch.
Oh, yeah. I know,
she writes for The Guardian.
Yeah, she gets on telly quite a lot.
It was a really good article about schools. And she was talking about how it's long been predicted that a two-tier system will become to exist in schools because schools are having to ask more and more for parents to make donations. And they're providing more and more of these really elite, really expensive trips that basically anyone who wasn't properly rich could go on, like this £3,000 trip to Borneo. Who could afford to go on that and stuff?
So what she's saying, there's two people,
there's two
classes,
to it.
The kids who can go and the kids who can't.
There's a class issue of they keep asking for money. So there was a school that had been asking for either £150 for the year or £12.50 per month of donations, which obviously is not what a state school should be doing. Right. And then also a problem of because schools are so underfunded and so understaffed, but also the government keeps pushing for better Ofsted ratings and better rankings for grades. They're putting all the kids who are struggling with English and maths just to do English and maths for the whole year, so they're not bringing down the average. And the people who are more academically inclined are going in separate classes, and it's creating a two-tier of intelligence in schools as well. And it's harkening back to a grammar school era, but just within the same
within
schools.
Within grammar school and secondary modern thing. But isn't that always going to happen? I mean, you've always got some people who are...
But it shouldn't, because... The whole point is loads of there was the sociologist Michael Young, who coined the term meritocracy, there you go, wrote in 1958, children who've been labelled dunce, which means not that smart, doesn't it, repeatedly, cannot any longer pretend their image of themselves is more nearly a true and flattering reflection. If kids keep getting put into a separate class and all they're getting to learn is English and maths to pass an exam, then they just become disenfranchised anyway, and it doesn't work. That's the whole point of not having everything as sets.
Yes, I mean, but that was the thinking behind. I mean, that thinking from the 1950s, the sociologists or 40s, has been around for a long time, and that was the whole thinking behind comprehensive education. You know, which we have everything's going to be the same. Everybody's going to be in the same streams, if you like.
Yeah.
You know, there's not going to be any upper sets, lower sets, anything. There's no grammar schools, no secondary modern schools, and then there's always the desire by parents for their kids to get a little bit, you know. And if they've got the money.
No, I guess, yeah, but it is frustrating, I guess, if you're in a class where they're in so many different levels, and I suppose that is more difficult to teach. But probably not with, at my school, you had maths was settled, but everything else was everyone in the same class. And I think that worked-ish.
Maybe what goes on in school. I'm just thinking of people like Keith Waterhouse and all sorts of writers who've written about writers who grew up in the 30s or 40s, very, very deprived, and went on to, you know, to write books and to write newspaper columns and all that sort of thing, which was sort of self-educated. I think what's actually probably worse than schools being underfunded is libraries closing. You know,
Sad.
Because so there was a whole generation of people who
but
grew
then
up
I guess like even
educating themselves, you know, in libraries.
Even people who maybe wouldn't be going to libraries, you do have the internet now. Do you know what I mean? And I think that you're not taught to... Yeah, I think that, self-education, you're not taught how to do it as well as you could do. To think you've got all the information in the world at your fingertips, because most people do have a smartphone. Most kids, even if they're not... If their families are not really well off, have, iPhones, which is a weird thing of... Which is a weird class thing, I think, now.
Yeah, the iPhone, Facebook, etc., all classless.
Yeah.
The poorest people...
I mean, I know there are some people who are on the poverty line and they don't have iPhones. That's not what we're suggesting. But people who wouldn't well, have.
It's
in
interesting
the past
because according to the United Nations, one in four people in Britain is in poverty. You probably saw that report, and I'm just wondering. I don't think that one in four people are without an iPhone. I'm not disputing what the United Nations
are saying. Yeah, one in four people will not have an iPhone.
Do you think so?
Oh, 100%. Because so many people have Samsungs.
Very good.
I can Google...
A smartphone.
Percentage of people with a smartphone in the UK. It says smartphones have become the hub of our daily lives and are now in the pockets of 2/3 of UK adults.
So there you are. So therefore, a lot of those people who are in poverty, if we agree with what the United Nations
this
say...
This is adults, I guess.
I don't know. But those people...
Oh, the vast majority... 90% of 16 to 24-year-olds own a smartphone.
Right. So some of those people will be in poverty, according to the United Nations, but will still have a smartphone, which is a very interesting statistic in that...
It is interesting. I don't know how...
Which means they could educate themselves via the smartphone in the way that Keith Waterhouse, which is the example I gave, educated himself in the Hunslet Library.
I mean, obviously libraries should stay open. Libraries are really, really important.
Of course they are.
But also libraries are so underfunded. Like, I worked in a library and there's not enough computers either because people have to do so many forms on them and you're only allowed like 1 hour per day, which is not long enough.
No.
But you have to limit it because if not, no one else would ever get on one.
Yeah. Although I'm sure books...
books are more important than
computers. You
books
know.
Are, but I'm saying that libraries like serve a purpose to a community, which books can't do. Mm. People will fill out.
There is a play running that the West Yorkshire, well, not the West Yorkshire, Leeds Playhouse are doing at the moment about libraries. And there is a very interesting conversation where somebody says, one of the people says, books, you know, surely libraries these days, they're all about coffee and computers and shit.
No, like the books are really, really important and there are things you can find in books that you can never find on the internet, but there is a lot of people who use the library because they need to fill out, like, benefits forms and you can't do that in a book.
No.
Like, a computer serves a practical purpose.
Oh, yes,
I agree
with all
and
that.
Not, and that's not me playing down the importance of books or the importance of reading. I think you can do both.
You're absolutely right. I think the problem is that things like Facebook and apps and all those things, they're invested in keeping you on their platform. You know, they don't want you, rather like the trains, they want you to stay on the platform as long as possible, which means that you're not necessarily getting information when you're on the...
What you're doing
is looking at Facebook.
Yeah.
I think that's it probably for this week.
I think it probably is.
Now, one feature we didn't include in this, with it being the first one of season two, is that we didn't have lots of emails from my cronies. The reason for that is, of course, I didn't give out the email address in the final episode. But the email address is martinandruthpodcast@gmail.com. And we would love to hear from you. Andrew in Cornwall.
No matter what age.
But we'd like to hear from, you know, younger listeners as well. But like I said to you last week, it's mainly older listeners who will send emails. So do send us an email. martinandruthpodcast@gmail.com.
And also there's the Spotify.
Oh, yes, Spotify, if you want to hear more of Childish Gambino, the whole thing, and more of the birds.
Which you can go on Spotify in search for Ruthie, Me and My Dad, and that'll go straight to the playlist, or Martin and Ruth, and that'll go to our page, and then you can click on the playlist from there.
You can. And Andrew in Cornwall, we're keeping him. We're not going to do Owen Wilson for him this week.
No way.
You'll do it next week, yeah?
I'll think about it.
Think about it. There you go. But if there's any impersonations you want to request or comment...
that I can't do either.
Or comment on anything we've said, we'd love to hear from you. martinandruthpodcast@gmail.com. And that's the end of episode one, season two.
Time to
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.